Chapter 8. That Smoldering City. Atop Moon Shadow, her deep brown mare from the royal stables, Elaine Trakand rode through a gateway of her own making. Those stables were now in the hands of Trollocs, and Moon Shadow's stablemates had undoubtedly found their way into cookpots by now. Elaine did not think too hard about what else. Who else might have ended up in those same pots? She set her face in determination. Her troops would not see their queen look uncertain. She had chosen to come to a hill about 1,000 paces to the northwest of Camelin, well out of bow range, but close enough to see the city. Several mercenary bands had made their camp in these hills during the weeks following the Succession War. Those had all either joined the armies of light or had disbanded, becoming roving thieves and brigands. The foreguard had already secured the area, and Captain Gaibon saluted as members of the Queen's Guard, both male and female, surrounded Elaine's horse. The air still smelled of smoke, and seeing Camelin smoldering like Dragonmount itself, tossed a handful of bitter powder into the stew of emotions churning inside of her. The once proud city was dead, a pyre that pitched 100 different columns of smoke toward the storm clouds above. The smoke reminded her of the spring burnings, when farmers would occasionally fire their fields to help clear them for planting. She hadn't ruled Camelin for 100 days, and already it was lost. If dragons can do that to a city, she thought, surveying the hole that Talmanis had made in the nearest wall, the world will need to change. Everything we know about warfare will change. How many, would you say? She asked the man who rode up beside her. Talmanis was only 1 day of rest away from the ordeal that should have cost him his life. He probably should have remained at Merilor. He certainly wouldn't be doing any frontline fighting in the near future.
It is impossible to count their numbers, hidden as they are in the city, Your Majesty, he said, bowing respectfully. Tens of thousands, but probably not hundreds of thousands.
The fellow was nervous around her, and he manifested it in a very Kyrianan way, by speaking with flowery respect. He was said to be one of Matt's most trusted officers. She would have assumed that by now Matt would have corrupted the fellow far more. He didn't curse once. Pity. Other gateways opened nearby onto the yellow grass, and her forces came through, filling the field and topping the hills. She had taken charge of a large army of warriors, which included many of the Siswai Aman, to bolster her queen's guard and the Andoran regulars under the command of Birgitta and Captain Gaibon. A second contingent of Aiel, maidens, wise ones, and the remaining warriors, had been chosen to travel north to Shael Ghul with Rand. Only a handful of wise ones had come with Elaine, the ones who followed Perrin. Elaine would have liked more channelers than that. Still, she did have the band and their dragons, which should make up for the fact that her only other channelers were the kinswomen, many of whom were on the weaker side of strength in the power. Perrin and his force had come with her. That included Mayenne's winged guards, the Gildanin cavalry, the white cloaks. She still wasn't sure what she thought of that, and a company of Two Rivers archers with Tam. Filling out her army was the group who called themselves the Wolf Guard, mostly refugees turned soldiers, some of whom had received combat training. And, of course, she had Captain Bashir and his Legion of the Dragon. She had approved Bashir's plan for the battle at Camelin.
We will need to draw the fighting into the woods, he had explained. The archers will be deadly, loosing at the Trollocs upon their approach. If these lads can move as well as I am told they can in the forest, they'll be just as dangerous once they've pulled back.
The Aiel, too, would be deadly in a forest, where the Trollocs wouldn't be able to use their masses to overrun their opponents. Bashir himself rode nearby.
Apparently Rand had specifically told him to watch over her, as if she didn't have Birgitta jumping every time she moved. "Rand had better stay safe, so I can tell him what I think of him," she thought, as Bashir approached in quiet conversation with Birgitta. Bashir was a bow-legged man with a thick mustache. He didn't talk to Elaine the way a man should a queen, but then the Queen of Saldea was his niece, so perhaps he was just very comfortable around royalty. "He is first in line for the throne," Elaine reminded herself. Working with him would offer opportunities to further secure her ties to Saldea. She still liked the idea of seeing one of her children on that throne. She lowered a hand to her stomach. The babes kicked and elbowed frequently now. Nobody had told her it would feel so much like, well, indigestion. Unfortunately, Melfane had, against all expectation, found some goat's milk. "What word?" Elaine asked, as Birgitta and Bashir arrived, Talmanis moving his horse aside to make room.
"Scout reports of the city are in," Bashir said.
"Bashir was right," Birgitta said. "The Trollocs have been reined in, and the burning has mostly died out. A good half of the city still stands. Much of that smoke you see is from cook fires, not buildings."
"Trollocs are stupid," Bashir said, "but half-men are not. The Trollocs would have gleefully ransacked the city and lit fires all across it, but that would have threatened to let the fires get away from them. Either way, the truth is we don't know what the Shadow is planning here, but they at least have the option of trying to hold the city for a time, should they desire."
"Will they try that?" Elaine asked.
"I can't say, honestly," Bashir replied. "We don't know their goals. Was this attack on Camelin intended to sow chaos and bring fear to our armies? Or is it intended to take a stronghold and hold it long-term as a base from which to harry our forces? Back during the Trolloc Wars, the Fades did hold cities for that purpose."
Elaine nodded.
"Pardon, Your Majesty," a voice said.
She turned to see one of the Two Rivers men stepping up. One of their leaders, Tam's second in command. Danil, she thought, that's his name.
"Your Majesty," Danil repeated.
He fumbled a bit, but actually spoke with some polish.
"Lord Goldeneyes has his men set up in the forest."
"Lord Talmanis, do you have your dragons in position?"
"Almost," Talmanis said. "Pardon, Your Majesty, but I'm not certain the bows will be needed once those weapons fire. Are you certain you don't want to lead with the dragons?"
"We need to goad the Trollocs into battle," Elaine said. "The placement I outlined will work best. Bashir, what of my plan for the city itself?"
"I think everything is almost ready, but I'll want to check," Bashir said,
knuckling his mustache in thought.
"Those women of yours made gateways well enough, and Mayen gave us the oil. You're sure you want to go through with something so drastic?"
"Yes." Bashir waited for more of a response, perhaps an explanation. When she didn't give one, he moved off, issuing the last orders. Elaine turned Moonshadow to ride down the ranks of soldiers here at the front lines, where they'd be set up near the forests. There wasn't much she could do now, in these last moments, as her commanders gave orders, but she could be seen riding with confidence. Where she passed, the men raised their pikes higher, lifted their chins. Elaine kept her own eyes on that smoldering city. She would not look away, and she would not let anger control her. She would use the anger. Bashir returned to her a short time later.
"It's done. The basements of many buildings that are still standing have been filled with oil. Talmanis and the others are in place. Once your warder returns with word that the kinswomen are prepared to open another round of gateways, we can proceed."
Elaine nodded, and then removed her hand from her belly as Bashir glanced at it. She hadn't realized she'd been holding it again. "What do you think of me going into battle while pregnant? Is it a mistake?" He shook his head.
No. It proves just how desperate our situation is. It will make the soldiers think. Make them more serious. Besides...
What? Bashir shrugged.
Perhaps it will remind them that not everything in this world is dying.
Elaine turned back, looking at the distant city. Farmers burned their fields in the spring to prepare them for new life. Maybe that was what Andor was suffering now.
Tell me, Bashir said. Are you going to tell the men that you're carrying the Lord Dragon's child?
Children, Elaine corrected in her head. You presume to know something that may or may not be true, Lord Bashir.
I have a wife and a daughter. I recognize the look in your eyes when you see the Lord Dragon. No woman with child touches her hand to her womb so reverently when looking on a man who is not the father.
Elaine drew her lips into a line.
Why do you hide it? Bashir asked. I've heard what some of the men think. They talk of some other man, a dark friend named Melar, once captain of your guardswomen. I can see that the rumors are false, but others are not so wise. You could kill those rumors if you wished.
Rand's children will be targets, she said.
Ah,
he replied. He knuckled his mustache for a moment. If you disagree with the reasoning, Bashir, speak your mind. I will not suffer a toady.
I'm no toady, woman, he said with a huff. But regardless, I hardly doubt your child could be a greater target than he or she already is. You're high commander of the armies of the light. I think your men deserve to know what exactly they're fighting for.
It is not your business to know, Elaine said. Nor is it theirs. Bashir raised an eyebrow at her.
The heir to the realm, he said flatly, is not the business of its subjects.
I believe you are overstepping your bounds, General.
Perhaps I am, he said. Maybe spending so much time with the Lord Dragon has warped the way I do things. That man, he could never tell what he was thinking. Half of the time he wanted to hear my mind as raw as I could lay it out. The other half of the time it seemed like he'd break me in two just for commenting that the sky looked a little dark.
Bashir shook his head.
Just give it some thought, Your Majesty. You remind me of my daughter. She might have done something similar, and this is the advice I'd give her. Your men will fight more bravely if they know that you carry the Dragon Reborn's heir.
Men, Elaine thought. The young ones try to impress me with every stunt that comes into their fool heads. The old ones assume every young woman is in need of a lecture. She turned her eyes toward the city again as Birgitta rode up and gave her a nod. The basements were filled with oil and pitch. Burn it, Elaine said loudly. Birgitta waved a hand. The kinswomen opened their round of gateways, and men hurled lit torches through into the basements of Camelin. It didn't take long for the smoke rising above the city to grow darker, more ominous. They won't soon put that out, Birgitta said softly. Not with the dry weather we've been having. The entire city will go up like a haystack. The army gathered to stare at the city, particularly the members of the Queen's Guard and the Andoran military. A few of them saluted, as one might salute the pyre of a fallen hero. Elaine ground her teeth, then said, Birgitta, make it known among the guards. The children I carry were fathered by the Dragon Reborn. Bashir's smile deepened. Insufferable man! Birgitta was smiling as she went to spread the word. She was insufferable, too. The men of Andor seemed to stand taller, prouder, as they watched their capital burn. Trollocs started pouring from the gates, driven by the fires. Elaine made sure the Trollocs saw her army, then announced, Northward! She turned Moonshadow. Camelin is dead! We take to the forests!
Let the shadow spawn follow!
Andral awoke with dirt in his mouth. He groaned, trying to roll over, but found himself bound in some way. He spat, licked his lips, and blinked crusty eyes. He lay with Jonath and Amarin against an earthen wall, tied by ropes. He remembered light. The roof had fallen in. Pevara, he sent. Incredible how natural that method of communication was beginning to feel. He was rewarded with a groggy sensation from her. The bond let him know that she was nearby, probably tied up as well. The one power was also lost to him. He clawed at it, but ran up against a shield. His bonds were tied to some kind of hook in the ground behind him, hindering his movement. Andral shoved panic down with some effort. He couldn't see Nalam. Was he here? The group of them lay tied in a large chamber, and the air smelled of damp earth. They were still underground in a part of Taim's secret complex. If the roof fell in, Andral thought, the cells were probably destroyed. That explained why he and the others were tied up but not locked away. Someone was sobbing. He strained around and found Evan tied nearby. The younger man wept, shaking.
It's all right, Evan, Andral whispered. We'll find a way out of this.
Evan glanced at him, shocked. The youth was tied in a different way, in a seated position, hands behind his back.
Andral. Andral, I'm sorry.
Andral felt a twisting emotion.
For what, Evan?
They came right after the rest of you left. They wanted Amarin, I think, to turn him. When he wasn't there, they began asking questions, demands. They broke me, Andral. I broke so easily. I'm sorry.
So Taim hadn't discovered the fallen guards.
It's not your fault, Evan.
Footsteps sounded on the ground nearby. Andral feigned unconsciousness, but someone kicked him.
I saw you talking, page boy, Mishrael said, leaning down his golden-haired head.
I'm going to enjoy killing you for what you did to Kotaran.
Andral opened his eyes and saw Loghain sagging in the grip of Mezar and Welen. They dragged him near and dropped him roughly to the ground. Loghain stirred and groaned as they tied him up. They stood and one spat on Andral before moving over to Amarin.
No,
Taim said from somewhere near.
The youth is next. The Great Lord demands results. Loghain is taking too long.
Evan's sobs grew louder as Mezar and Welen moved over to seize him under the arms.
No,
Andral said, twisting.
No! Taim, burn you! Leave him alone! Take me!
Taim stood nearby, hands clasped behind his back, in a sharp black uniform that resembled those of the Ashaman but trimmed with silver. He wore no pins at his neck. He turned toward Andral, then sneered.
Take you? I am to present to the Great Lord a man who can't channel enough to break a pebble? I should have culled you long ago.
Taim followed the other two, who were dragging away the frantic Evan. Andral screamed at them, yelling until he was hoarse. They took Evan somewhere on the other side of the chamber. It was very large, and Andral could not see them because of the angle at which he was tied. Andral dropped his head back against the floor, closing his eyes. That didn't prevent him from hearing poor Evan's screams of terror.
Andral, Pevara whispered.
Quiet,
Mishrael's voice was followed by a thump and a grunt from Pevara.
I am really starting to hate that one, Pevara sent to him.
Andral didn't reply.
They took the effort to dig us out of the collapsed room, Pevara continued. I remember some of it, before they shielded me and knocked me unconscious. It seems to have been less than a day since then. I guess Taim hasn't yet hit his quota of dreadlords turned to the shadow.
She sent it, almost with levity. Behind them, Evan's screams stopped.
O light,
Pivar assent.
Was that Evan?
All wryness vanished from her tone.
What's happening?
They're turning him, Andril sent back. Strength of will has something to do with resisting. That is why Loghain hasn't been turned yet.
Pivara's concern was a warmth through the bond. Were all Aes Sedai like her? He'd assumed they had no emotions, but Pivara felt the full range, although she accompanied it with an almost inhuman control over how those emotions affected her. Another result of decades of practice?
How do we escape? She sent.
I'm trying to untie my bonds. My fingers are stiff.
I can see the knot. It's a hefty one, but I might be able to guide you.
He nodded, and they began, Pivara describing the turns of the knot as Andril tried to twist his fingers around them. He failed to get enough purchase on the bonds. He tried pulling his hands free and wiggling them out, but the ropes were too tight. By the time he accepted defeat, his fingers were numb from the lack of circulation.
It's not going to work, he sent. I've been trying to push out of this shield, Pivara replied. It's possible, and I think our shields might be tied off. Tied off shields fail.
Andril sent back agreement, though he couldn't keep from feeling frustrated. How long could Evan hold out? The silence taunted him. Why couldn't he hear any sounds? Then he sensed something. Channeling. Could that be 13 men? Light. If there were 13 Murdral as well, the situation was dire. What would they do if they escaped? They couldn't fight so many.
Which cliff did you choose?
Pivara sent him.
What? You said that when you were among the sea folk, they jumped off cliffs to prove their bravery. The higher the cliff, the braver the jumper. Which cliff did you choose?
The highest, he admitted.
Why?
I figured that once you've decided to jump off a cliff, you might as well pick the highest one. Why accept the risk if not for the greatest prize?
Pivara sent back approval.
We will escape, Andral. Somehow.
He nodded, mostly for himself, and set back at his knot. A few moments later, Taim's cronies returned. Evan squatted down beside Andral. Behind his eyes lurked something different, something awful. He smiled.
Well, that was certainly not as bad as I had assumed it would be, Andral.
Oh, Evan.
Don't worry about me, Evan said, resting a hand on Andral's shoulder. I feel great. No more fear, no more worry. We shouldn't have been fighting all of this time. We are the Black Tower. We need to work together.
You are not my friend, Andral thought. You might have his face, but Evan, oh light, Evan is dead.
Where is Nalam? Andral asked.
Died in the cave-in, I'm afraid.
Evan shook his head. He leaned in.
They're planning to kill you, Andral, but I think I can convince them that you're worth turning instead. You'll thank me eventually.
The terrible thing inside of Evan's eyes smiled, patted Andral on the shoulder, then rose and began chatting with Mezar and Wellen. Behind them, Andral could barely see 13 shadows trailing over to grab Imaran and drag him away to be turned next. Fades, with cloaks that did not move. Andral thought how lucky Nalam was to be crushed in the collapse.